16-year-old.
Bitch!
They took it to 10.
I got home.
You recognize this, Tom?
No, I can't even make a joke about it. I have no idea.
This was one of the songs that played in the like little compilation before Broner walked out with, I think it was G Herbo.
I'll take your word for it.
You
yeah, I guess I wasn't paying close enough attention to that.
That's Mo Bamba. You don't know that song?
G-Herbo. I mean, yeah, you could literally just be making up letters and stringing them together, and I would not have more of an answer to give about it.
All right, well...
G-Herbo.
This is the Sunday Puncher Podcast, the source for all your rap music news. Right, Tom?
Yeah, I can confirm it was G Herbo. I had never heard of him before, but there's a XXL Mag has a headline: G Herbo rocks out with walks out with Adrian Broner. So there you go.
I told you. So yesterday we talked all about Pacquiao and Broner, the whole pay per view. If that is the conversation you want to hear, just hit pause on this one, go back on the feed, and you can listen to the previous podcast, which we spent about an hour and a half breaking down that whole pay-per-view. We looked at the undercard. We looked at all aspects of that on the Sunday Puncher Podcast, which is what you're listening to. But today, this episode is to let's tackle the rest. All the things that we didn't cover, because we had a jammed weekend of boxing. And we will start things off with Demetrius Andrade's win. See, I wrote a unanimous decision in the notes, but I made a mistake. Because it wasn't a unanimous decision. It should have been a unanimous decision over Artur Akhovov, but it was actually a stoppage win. And I'm going to ask you flat out, was that the worst stoppage you've ever seen in a boxing ring?
I don't think the worst stop. I mean, there's some real talk to be had about this. That
you better come with some examples if you don't think it is.
I'm totally just gonna be a wet blanket here, but yeah, I mean, look, brain injuries happen disproportionately later in fights. It's linked to exhaustion, basically. Like if a fighter is tired out, their brain isn't getting as much oxygen. There's also an accumulation of punishment over the rounds. So yeah, it's like there's something to be said for the sake of his career to let it go the distance. But it's like at any time to have a quick stoppage, you know, it is in the last minute, you know. But yeah, no, bad stoppage. But I don't know. I don't have a hotter take than that.
Well,
is it literally the worst you've seen?
For me, it is. It is the worst premature stoppage that I've ever seen. And I've seen some. You know, a good, bad, early stoppage is the Frotch-Groves fight, the first one. I think there's certainly an argument that could be made for both ways. And the argument for that was too early is just as strong as... It was a good stoppage, but this one was terrible. Artur Akhovov was not getting pummeled in that fight. Like, I get that he was losing the fight. For sure he was losing the fight, but he was not getting just obliterated in there. We've seen these fights where a guy, I mean, Badu Jack got beat worse than Artur Akhovov. And like, I don't think Jack walked out of that fight like just in danger for his health. Only thing probably was that the loss of blood. Adrian Broner didn't get beat. I mean, maybe Adrian Broner got hit more than Akhovov did. I'm not too sure. But the fact is that he shouldn't have been stopped. Not that late. This was not no Chavez versus Meldrick Taylor situation where like, yet Meldrick was really hurt. Akhovov wasn't hurt. It was just a bizarre stoppage in a line of weird things that happened. I mean, I said this before the fight. Arthur McCanty is refereeing this one. Weird stuff happens in his fights. And lo and behold, he stops the fight way too early. But needless to say, Andrade wins the fight. So the question is, where does he fit in this middleweight landscape?
I have to say, I'm just watching the highlight again. I just have to tell a quick story. A very well-known boxing writer that anyone who's listening to this will have heard of. I've sat
Michael
next
Woods.
To him at a few, not more well-known than him. I've sat Dan next. No comment. Anyway, that I've sat next to at a few New York boxing events.
It's probably Keith Idick.
Hates Arthur McKinney Jr. I mean, not as a person, but when he's fighting, you know, it's one of those things, like, you've been on press row, like, people will just sort of let their opinions be known. They'll sort of want to hold court, or like, whenever Arthur McKinney is reffing, he'll say, you know, he's a terrible ref and point out examples. And like, I had never really thought about it. You know, there's that famous example with the Yuri Foreman Miguel Cotto fight where he wouldn't let Yuri Foreman quit, which is just crazy, and you'd think would open him up to like
that, but we'll get to that
civil
later.
Or criminal liability, depending on what happened, you know, how bad that could have gone. But yeah, it's just like a very unnecessarily we'll put his hands on fighters, like he'll you know, just make way too much contact on guys, like insert himself into fights when he doesn't need to. And, you know, as shown here, bad stoppages. I mean, it's like I just watched the clip again, and it's like, I get why he did it. I can get in his mindset where it just seems like unnecessary punishment. It's sort of weighing on his mind that, you know, assuming that there's no corruption, like I'm just throwing that out the window, and, you know, that, you know, damage is adding up. But I mean, it's a terrible stoppage, and you have to, I mean, Akhavov immediately is, you know, protesting.
Let me ask you this.
It's pretty bad.
You
pretty
watched
bad.
The clip. Maybe you need to rewind it. Before he steps in to stop it, he looked out of the ring. He was not looking at the fighters. He looked out of the ring. I remember this very vividly. The camera, he's on the what would be the west side of the ring, the left side. He looks outside, comes back in, and steps in and stops it. Now, I'm not going to sit here and say that there's corruption or that there's any foul play, but if there was, it's pretty obvious, plain sight that this is going on. But again, I'm not accusing them that of happening. I just think people make mistakes.
Well, yeah. I mean, but that's the thing, though. It's like that it doesn't necessarily need to be corruption. Like, he could have talked to, like, New York is very, like, again, people, if they're listening to the podcast, they know boxing enough. New York is very aggressive. You know, they bring in doctors between rounds if someone's buzzed at all. They really, after the settlement for the Abdus Salamov, you know, incident, they really err on the side of caution. So yeah, it definitely could have been, you know, the doctor saying if he takes one more good shot, if it looks like he's going to get hurt in there, you know, stop it. The commissioner could have said something to him, like, you know, it doesn't need to be corruption, you know? God, I'm just watching it again. I mean, it's so ridiculous. Like, I can see where he thought he stumbled back, but from Akhavov's point, he was just circling, and there's so little time left in the round. I mean, it's just, ugh. Anyway, I don't want to spend more time on this.
Yeah, so
but
where does Andrade fit in at middleweight?
Yeah, you know, reminded of the topic yesterday about guys at 175 needing to break through, and he just continues to not have, you know, breakthrough performance. I mean, he's starting to look like the Zerto of 160, where they keep lowering the level of opposition. You know, Walter Kautendakwa was not his fault that he fought him, but, you know, Alantes Fox, that was supposed to be a showcase opponent. Arthur Akhavov was supposed to be a showcase opponent, and Walter Kautendakwa should have been a showcase opponent based on his level. You know, he's winning these fights soundly, but really not looking sensational. I don't know, somewhere between 5 and 10. I mean, I think it really does come down to specific fighters, though. You know, it's like Canelo, clearly you'd rank him above. Golovkin, clearly you'd rank him above. Jacobs, you'd clearly rank him above. Charlo, prior to his last fight, I think people would say clearly rank him above. You have to at least make the argument now. I mean, Charlo looks bad in his last fight, but I think that was, you know, credit to Khorabov. Billy Joe Saunders, kind of a question mark. Sergey Davrionchenko, hard to rank him above Andre. Lemieux, I think anyone with any sense would say that Lemieux got outclassed by Andre. So
Lemieux's,
yeah,
not even,
I mean,
in this conversation, don't even,
I think,
give that guy,
you
that
have
much
to end
credit
up at 4 or 5. I think that's the very easy thing, or yeah, 4, 5, or 6. I mean, you have basically it's Jacobs, Canelo, and Golovkin are above, and then, you know, it's kind of a toss-up with Charlo, Billy Joe Saunders, and Andre, where those next positions are. Do you see it any differently than that? Do you think there's any anyone else who could go above him? Do you think he has a claim more than any of those three guys at 4, 5, 6?
Yeah, so I'm pretty confident that at the most optimistic that you could be, I'm talking about, you're a fan of Demetrius, the highest you can put him is number 5.
Interesting.
He is not as good as Canelo. He is not as good as Danny Jacobs. He is not as good as Golovkin. And he is certainly not as good as Billy Joe Saunders. I mean, I see people that are like, oh, well, you know, who knows? I mean, you just said it. You know, he could be ranked above Saunders. I don't think so. I think Billy Joe Saunders is underrated. He's a guy that gets slept on for whatever reason. The fact that he fights in the UK, the fact that he's just a terrible person, the fact that he failed a drug test and had perhaps one of the stupidest defenses that I've ever seen in the sport of boxing, you know, that for that reason. But Saunders is incredibly talented. And I don't think that Andrade's done anything in his career to say that he's better than Saunders. Certainly not getting dropped by Vonis Martirosyan in the first round of his fight. Certainly not struggling against Jack Colquay. Those things do not convince me. And let me tell you this. For anyone that's like, oh, well, Andrade should be in the conversation amongst the top guys because he's so talented. Okay, and there are people out there that speak
are,
like
are
that.
You talking about Chris Mannix specifically?
Oh, Mannix.
Chris Mannix has made Andrade his personal cause. It's very, anyway.
Hey, yeah. I respect that. Like, insofar as somebody that's willing to take a stand for something that they believe in, I respect you, Chris Mannix.
That he started believing in as soon as he got a job at DAZN. Let's
but
just
you're
clarify
wrong.
That.
But you're wrong. And look, it's not like Mannix is like not wrong all the time. You should be used to it. But anyway, he's had some terrible takes lately, but let's not get on that. And obviously that it's his job to shill DAZN, I believe. So like, whatever, like I'm not hating on him for that. But if you put Canelo, Danny Jacobs, and Gennady Golovkin in the ring with an Artur Akhovov, or in the ring with Alantes Fox, or in the ring with Walter Katsandakwa, those guys might even do a stretcher job. If not, they're going out on their backs. And I know that we shouldn't measure, you know, how good a fighter is based off of their power. However, at a certain level, when you get put in the ring with somebody that's just so much worse than you, you should stop them at the minimum. Like, Oscar Valdez is seen as something of a puncher, but the guy's got no power. But that's because a lot of the guys he's fought have been so far less talented than he is that he's gotten stoppages because he just beats the hell out of them. And that's not happening with Andrade. And the question you should ask is why? It's because he's not that much better than them. Canelo will blow out Akhovov. Okay? Look, here's a hole in my, like, if you want to poke a hole in what I'm saying, I'll do it for you. Well, Saunders didn't stop Akhovov. Saunders didn't stop these guys. Come on now. Saunders ain't a puncher. Like, that's just not his game. He don't punch hard. But he clearly wins fights. The Akhovov fight, he came in weighing like 200 pounds. All right? So, like, I'll give him that pass. And I've given Andrade a pass for other fights, but he don't get one for all of them. So I rank him at five. The wild cards that you brought up, Jermall Charlo and Matt Korobov, I'll hear arguments for both of them being above Andrade right now. I'll hear it. I don't know that you can really convince me. I think Charlo and Andrade are definitely around the same. They might even be tied for number five. You can put them in any order you want. Korobov should be right below them. I'm not sold on Derevyanchenko. I never have been. He was impressive in the Danny Jacobs fight, but I think that was more Jacobs than Derevyanchenko. So that's where I think Andrade fits in. He's still in that class below, and I don't know what he could do. He'd have to clearly beat Saunders to put himself in the Canelo Golovkin section of the middleweight division.
I mean, you know, that basically lines up with my thinking. Just a final thought on Andre. You know, he's tried to market himself as sort of the Andre Ward path. Like, Ward, for those of you who are too young to know, Ward really, like, didn't look impressive earlier in his career. He was hurt against some very low-level opponents early on. He was, and others. He was showcased on HBO, and then basically he lost that level of shine. You know, it wasn't going to be a thing like Oscar De La Hoya where they showed every one of his fights. Like, they're kind of like, go develop first and then we'll worry about showing you later. Eventually reemerged on Showtime, entered the the Super Six tournament as a heavy underdog, ended up winning the tournament. That really established his current standing. And, you know, it was the thing, like, he would not look great, but, you know, his argument was, you know, I'm a gold medalist. I'm going to continue to beat guys as I move up in competition. I'm not always going to look good doing it. I'm not really a knockout puncher. And that's really what Andre has tried to say. And, like, you know, that has seemed to be the case, like, one time, and that was the Willie Nelson fight. Like, that's really one fight in his career that you can look at and say that he showed the talent that he would seem to have, that people talk about in sparring stories, to, you know, stories coming out of the gym, stories coming out of the amateurs. Beyond that, it just, like, you know, I had wondered for a while, especially after the Willie Nelson fight, like, is he going to have an Andre Ward moment where he gets a chance against a top guy and really shows just how good he is? You know, think of Caleb Plant. Like, I don't think anyone had high expectations of him, but he was a guy who, you know, didn't always look amazing, but again, good amateur, was an Olympic alternate. And when he had that chance against a higher level opponent, like, that was when he really shined. But I'm more and more thinking that is not going to happen with Andrade, and Andrade is going to end up losing his title defense, losing in a title defense to some very unheralded opponent. Like, I'm really just losing faith in him that he's ever going to turn it over and put on a stellar performance, really, that he's going to have that Andre Ward moment. I mean, obviously Andre Ward is a very high bar, but I've just lost faith in him. It's so weird. Like you said, it's like, why can't he stop these lower level guys that are being brought in for him to stop? Like, you know, it was like Zerto two fights ago. It's just like, what's happening with this guy? You know, this is not how high level fighters are meant to behave.
Well, I think bringing up Caleb Plant, bringing up Andre Ward, those are exceptions to what is usually a pretty predictable pattern. We don't always see these guys, you know, even to reach Andrade's level, it really takes something. Like, he's an exception. But I think Caleb Plant is an exception, and anybody who's trying to sit here and say, like, oh, you know, we saw that coming. No, you didn't. Nobody saw that coming. No, Caleb Plant was written off a long time ago. And dude's got the chip on his shoulder to prove it. But if it looks like the WBO is going to do some WBO stuff and insert Billy Joe Saunders as the mandatory, which means that he'll be able to negotiate a fight with Demetrius Andrade yet again. And should they sign that fight, I think I've made my prediction pretty clear. But how do you think that that's going to go?
I still, you know, I would still pick it to be a pretty close contest. I also have not been as sold on Billy Joe Saunders as a lot of other people. I think a lot of other people took way more out of the Lemieux fight than they should have.
I'm one of those people that rates Saunders highly. I ignore that fight. That fight was pathetic. I didn't enjoy it. I thought Billy Joe Saunders was very basic in that fight, and it was just so happened that because he can move, that rendered David Lemieux basically useless in that fight. And I've rated Saunders as a top guy at middleweight since probably 2013, 14 maybe, 2014. I've rated him as a top guy. So, but I get what you're talking about, though. Certainly a lot of people did take a lot out of that fight, which is just kind of ridiculous.
Yeah, so I don't have a hard take on who I think I would win. I just would definitely look forward to that fight. I mean, when it was signed originally and DAZN got the rights to it, I said that was really going to be, you know, their top fight of the fall. That was a fight that any network could be proud of, and I still feel that way. I'll really look forward to that fight if and when it happens.
All right, Jorge Linares, he was upset in one round by the great Pablo Cesar Cano. The question is whether or not Jorge Linares is done. What do you think?
Well, for the sake of his brain, he should be done. This is now his, you know, fifth stoppage loss. One or maybe two of those were cuts. Was it two were on cuts or
was
one?
Not the DeMarco fight. It was the Sergio Thompson legit knocked him out. I think DeMarco legit stopped him. Lomachenko legit stopped
Technically,
him.
Technically, the Sergio Thompson was due to a cut. And was I think it? The DeMarco one was... I mean, he was cut badly in the DeMarco fight also. But I don't... Anyway, he was beaten up in both of those fights too. So I mean, anyway,
he took a hell of a beating against DeMarco.
Yeah, yeah. I just rewatched that this week. And I watched the rewatched the stoppage anyway. I was thinking about making a GIF of it, but didn't feel it was really worth it. I don't really like making negative gifts unless there are specific circumstances. But
the Thompson fight was by cuts, but he was dropped in that fight.
Right, right. Anyway, so yeah, he's been stopped a number of times. I think people overrated how good he was because he beat Anthony Crolla, and people in turn overrated how good Anthony Crolla was at that time. And then also overrated how good he was. Lomachenko fans overrated how good he was because they view Lomachenko as being a god. So since Linares had some success against him, even though he got stopped ultimately, oh, that means Linares is some version of a god as well because he put hands on Lomachenko. Look, a lot of Linares's career has been a mirage. You know, he has a lot of wins against lower level opposition. He has a lot of losses to underwhelming opposition. Fought Abner Cotto in his last fight. You know, that's really all you need to say about that. I mean, that's someone, you know, a prospect could fight in their, you know, a hot prospect could fight in like their eighth fight or, you know, third fight even. So, yeah. Anyway, does he have any road forward? I think he could still make fights somewhere. I mean, they're just the landscape is so competitive now. I mean, like, could you see him fighting? Like, here's a fight, Alex Saucedo. You know, and then the winner fights Jose Ramirez on ESPN. I mean, there are still places he slots in, but I don't know. I think all you do have to say is he fought Lomachenko. He showed some talent, ultimately got stopped. fought Pablo Cesar Cano and got blitzed. I mean, I think I'm sort of rambling here, but one thing I'll say before I toss it back to you is just the story when he got stopped by Lomachenko was supposed to be that his frame is too big for 135. He can't make that weight anymore. Now he's up at 140 fighting, you know, basically a journeyman at this point, Pablo Cesar Cano. And then the story coming out of that fight is the weight is bad for him, so he can't compete against even a lower level opposition. So not really sure, you know, he's got to get his narrative straight. He has kind of a Kell Brook problem that, you know, Eddie Hearn's excuse for Spence beating him was the weight. Moved up to 154 with some underwhelming fights, and now he's back at 147 again. So anyway, your thoughts, is Linares done?
Yeah. Yeah. So Linares is definitely at his limit. Like, and I'm pretty sure he's done. I mean, I'm basing this off of the way he looked. Like, this is, of course, essentially me interpreting what I saw after the fight. And there's no real basis in reality for what I'm saying here. What I'm saying isn't true. It is my perspective on how he looked, but after the fight he looked totally defeated. He looked like he knew that that was it, like the that little fighting spirit that he might have had left is basically done. It's gone. And the sad thing is, like, that was his last fight on the Golden Boy deal, and this was the fight to set deal with another promoter that put him in position that he could have some money fights, whether that be with a rematch with Lomachenko and maybe a fight with Jose Ramirez, maybe signing with PBC and getting an Adrian Broner fight or something. But he got stopped. Maybe this was taking his eyes off the prize and basically becoming a trap fight. I don't know. But really, if you look at his future now, it's like it looks like he's going to be set up to be the opponent. And he's going to be cashed out against somebody that's going to beat him. And you could say that if he got the big deal, maybe that would have been the case anyway. But, like, having the stoppage means that he loses the leverage. It loses what he has going forward for himself. So he's definitely in a really tough position. I don't think he's done in terms of will he finish fighting. But as far as is he done, like, is the time of Jorge Linares being a top guy done? I think absolutely it is done.
Yeah, I think he's done at the competitive level, but, you know, there's still some ways that he could make money.
Also, 140 is a bad idea for him. I mean, if you can't take the power of Pablo Cesar Cano, I mean, first of all, he couldn't get out of the way of Cano's shots. Like, that was kind of shocking. Like, Jorge Linares was just getting nailed with these punches from Cano that you would expect that Linares would have enough craft to avoid. And then, two, he was basically going down every time he was getting hit with the right hand. So, really tough to see Linares.
I mean, did you see this happening at all? I mean, was it even in the back of your head that this might happen?
No, I mean, if you saw this coming, hold on, let me just think. Did I see this? No, I don't think I did.
So, I mean, something very specific when I asked six fights. Yeah, I just, like, when I remember watching Linares in the first Krolla fight, which was pretty close fight, and thinking, you know, halfway through, is this going to turn out like the DeMarco fight, where he's just going to completely come apart? You know, it's like, I was just waiting for him to come apart. Since the first Krolla fight, going into the second one, I no longer thought he's going to come apart. You know, Luke Campbell fight, didn't think he's going to come apart. And in the Lomachenko fight, I was pretty much expecting that fight to go the distance, you know? And it's sort of funny how now his, you know, I'm right back to thinking of him the same way I thought of him after the Sergio Thompson fight, where it's just like, God, this guy can't go rounds, you know? And that, by the way, that was a long road back from that. I mean, yep. He fought extremely low level competition before ultimately beating Kevin Mitchell, who, you know, not that that was that high level of a fight, you know. I mean, this is where I said a lot of his career has been a mirage. I mean, anyway, yeah, I think we're ready to move on probably.
Yeah. So over to the ESPN card, Bryant Jennings was upset in the final round by Oscar Rivas. And
I think mild upset.
Sure. Upset nonetheless, though. I definitely don't think there were many that thought Oscar Rivas would beat Bryant Jennings. Everyone who I spoke to was just like, who had seen Oscar Rivas fight was like, Oscar Rivas is terrible. Like, he was just a terrible boxer. Even though he was undefeated, it's like, this guy, some even went so far as to say he sucked. But he beat him. He is, he came away with the win. So now, what's the plan with Bryant Jennings going forward?
It's funny. I mean, I remember you seeing that on the show notes. I mean,
by the way, I said that this would be a tricky fight. I just want to say that. I said it would be a tricky fight.
I just, like, do we even care enough about Bryan Jennings? I mean, you know, it already seemed like ridiculous that Top Rank was pushing him as much as they were. And I think we kind of had the answer to that, which is, like, heavyweight boxing does good enough ratings. It's worth keeping him on their network, you know? But the heavyweight landscape is so competitive, and you have people split between, you know, young fighters split between the PBC and Matchroom. It's very competitive. I don't know. It's really like, I don't know what even the purpose of Bryan Jennings is. Like, he can no longer, I mean, it barely seemed credible that he could headline those ESPN shows before. I'd say definitely not now. I mean, coming off this knockout loss. So, I mean, I feel like depending on how much money he feels he needs, well, you know, it's not even, I think it's a given he needs to make money. So I think it's the Samuel Peters route for him. You know, I think he'll face up and coming guys, and he'll probably get more losses on his ledger. I don't think there's really a plan for him on the A side track anymore. What about you?
Well, I mean, I don't have a lot to say that's much different from what you said, but the one thing I will point out is Bryant Jennings gave one of the most interesting post-fight interviews that maybe I've ever seen.
And did not watch it, so okay, please if you didn't watch tell me it, and if, the viewers.
Yeah, if you didn't watch it, definitely go back, because I'm going to do a pretty bad job paraphrasing it. I didn't write anything down. But one, he kind of put the blame on his team, and and it was kind of like in a really it wasn't like a blatant like, well, my team messed up, but and again it or well, not again, I didn't say this already, but it's sort of sounded like maybe he made a mistake and is used to referring to, like, when he refers to Bryant Jennings, he means his whole team, because he, you know, like, a boxer isn't just a boxer. Like, there's a lot that goes into being who he is, and it includes a trainer and your coaches and stuff. And so maybe it kind of came off that way, where he was referring to us when really he meant me, but he kind of was putting blame on the team. and also blame on Top Rank for putting him in a position that wasn't beneficial to him. And then when asked about what was next, he's like, well, it definitely won't be here. And that could be interpreted a lot of different ways, like here on ESPN, here with Top Rank, here in the main event, who knows? But so I don't know exactly what he meant by those things, but it was a really interesting thing because it left a lot of things open. Like, is this his last fight on a Top Rank deal? Or is like he going to leave Top Rank? Does he know that his days in the heavyweight or at the main event level, are they done? Really interesting interview. I definitely recommend you check this one out if you didn't. But yeah, that was really my takeaway. It was just, I was kind of like, whoa, did he just say what I think he did? I had to rewind it and watch it because I wasn't sure.
Yeah, just minor speculation based on what you said. I mean, it's extremely likely that he was fighting for pretty low money based on his existing Top Rank contract, which was, you know, prior to the world of boxing going crazy with the entrance of DAZN. And, you know, maybe he thought there was a seven-figure payday for me somewhere and he was stuck making, you know, $100,000. I didn't see reported what he got paid for this, but got stuck getting paid some minimal amount of money and, you know, was just sort of forced to ride out his contract. Meanwhile, end up losing to Oscar Rivas. So, sucks for him if he did lose out on a seven-figure payday, but so goes it.
Yeah, well, I mean, yep, that's the sport. Shakur Stevenson on the undercard, he stopped Jesse Rosales. How far away do you think Shakur Stevenson is from getting a title shot?
So I think we're pretty far apart on this. So I have been critical of Shakur Stevenson in the past, and
well,
I thought
you
this
like
was
to be wrong.
I thought this was by far his most impressive performance of his career. You know, he got that quick knockout the last time out, but it's really hard to judge, you know, what that means when a knockout comes so quickly and easily. Prior to that, he's looked, in my opinion, pretty bad. He's looked tentative. He's been in with extremely low level competition. A lot of these guys have gone the distance with him. This fight, not really a step up. I mean, this is still very low level of opposition, but at least he did what he was supposed to do. You know, even if you have a heavy bag in front of you, it's still, the burden is on you to do something that looks impressive. So, yeah. So I will say this is for the first time, really, I'm believing in him as a prospect. But I mean, this is still very, very low level of opposition. I mean, this is very far away. I mean, this is the, you know, I don't even know the right thing to compare it to, but I mean, he hasn't come close to fighting, you know, former world champion, you know, any type of, you know, former title challenger, anything. So yeah, he's got a ways to go, but I was very impressed. I mean, the body work he did in this fight was fantastic. Really enjoyed watching it. And yeah, he's back on my radar screen for the first time since his pro debut.
I disagree with you. I think Shakur Stevenson is probably one fight away from fighting for a world title.
I mean, that's so indefensible.
I mean, think about this, okay? He's fought this level of opposition now. He's fought them, and what has he done with them? He's stopped them. He's beat them decisively. So I don't think there's much more that we can learn from Shakur Stevenson fighting this level of opponent. So I think it's time for him to move up, move into the next tier. And it's, I don't know how this is indefensible for Shakur Stevenson, but Naoya Inoue was able to do it. And so he's basically gotten to that level where he needs to face someone who's in the top maybe seven. And if he can beat that guy, then he's definitely ready for a world title shot. I think there's zero doubt in my mind. I mean, look at the world champions. I think Stevenson, with one more fight under his belt, gives Leo Santa Cruz a hell of a fight. You'd have to favor Santa Cruz because Santa Cruz is, you know, he's been around for a long time. He's that guy at 126, but Shakur Stevenson will give him a hell of a fight. Gary Russell, same thing. Good fighter, but Stevenson is real interesting in that fight. And then there's Josh Warrington, who I think Top Rank definitely want Oscar Valdez to fight him. But I think that's a good fight for Shakur Stevenson. Also, there's Oscar Valdez. I think Valdez versus Stevenson could be explosive in a few years. A few years is actually kind of long. Maybe late next year, maybe even we're looking 2021. But I think that's I think he's ready. What more can we learn?
I just look, the guy he fought, BoxRec, had him. I know it's imperfect, but BoxRec had his opponent at number 63 in the division. Is now dropped below the top 100 based on this defeat to Stevenson. He could fight someone in the top 50, top 30. I mean, you're saying fight someone in the top 7. I mean, I view this performance so much lower than I did, say, Jaime Munguia versus, you know, Saddam Ali, right? It's just so weird to hear you get so excited about him beating up a nobody. I mean, you know, someone who's less than a nobody.
Because
I mean,
you look at this, you're looking at this too much by the numbers. You got to look at like just how
well.
Good
I'm
he
also
looks.
Looking at what his opponent did in the fight, which was absolutely nothing.
Yeah, you know, and I can see that that's because of Stevenson. I'm not looking at that like, oh, he. They didn't bring in just like some jabroni. They brought in some guy who they thought would be able to test Stevenson a little bit, and he basically said, that's not happening. I'm going to dominate him. And that's what happens when you have a really good prospect. Stevenson is that good. You know, take a look at Oscar Valdez. When he fought Ruben Tamayo, who was supposed to be a punching bag, and it would be his HBO debut, he'd score an explosive knockout, and everyone would be excited about Oscar Valdez. Valdez just basically crapped the bed. He went 10 rounds with him. He got hit a ton. And Tamayo was just like one of those guys that you fear every time he gets in the ring because his defense is so awful that at some point he's going to wind up in a coma. And he gave Valdez a hell of a fight, which led me to believe, okay, Valdez maybe isn't the best prospect in boxing. Stevenson looks like he might be the best prospect in boxing if he isn't already. And I think that guy, you can afford to push him in a little quicker. I mean, who's in the top 10 that you think, is there anybody in the top 10 that you think Stevenson doesn't have a chance against?
I mean, look, I'm mostly ready to move on from this, but I just will say, I've talked about this before. I mean, that's just not how I judge prospects. Like, we don't know anything about his chin. We don't know anything about his power.
You think he'll beat JoJo Diaz?
Do I think he'll beat JoJo Diaz?
Yeah.
Right now, I mean, that's the thing. It's like there's just such a world of difference. Like the longest he's gone is 8 rounds. We haven't seen him in 12 rounds. Like he's fighting at a very different pace. He's already had multiple hand injuries. Like we don't know how that will hold up in longer fights. Like, yeah, I think there are so many question marks. I definitely would bet against him if he were thrown in with a top 10 guy right now, simply because of lack of experience. I mean, it would be just such, you know, there's so much he would have to overcome in a fight like that, you know. Again, it's like 2 fights ago, he went the distance with Carlos Ruiz. Like, that's just not where I am with him.
I see Stevenson the same way I saw Canelo. Up until a few years ago, but even still, one of the reasons why I was excited about Canelo when he first came over to America, where everyone was just all over just hating on him because they felt like he was being put on a pedestal way too early and done nothing. Canelo improved every single fight. He always added something, and he continues to do that to this day. And that's what I see with Stevenson. It's why I'm excited about Shakur Stevenson. And I think Stevenson could for sure beat someone in the top 10. And it'll probably be JoJo Diaz. Anyway, let's move on. Canelo and Jacobs, they have announced that they will be fighting each other on May 4th. Is this currently the biggest fight in boxing?
Yeah. It's funny looking at the notes. I went way down a rabbit hole. Short answer is yes. And it's definitely the fight I'm most looking forward to. I mean, it's a real event.
Really, this is the fight that you're most looking forward to? You have
that's
all
not
these
really
fights.
True.
Yeah, because like usually
I'm looking
for
forward
us.
To Spence Garcia specifically. I mean, just for my own, you know, just being a fan of
oh,
those
God.
Guys. But,
God, you went mainstream.
As far as the Spence, as far as just is this the biggest event? Yes. It is. It does become weird though, because like it used to be, we talk about very quick, you know, tangent on this topic. Used to talk about Canelo versus Joshua. And, you know, lots good of fight. People, including commentators, would say that Joshua is the biggest star on the planet, or, you know, he's the top money man, and would just say, look at his attendance numbers at Webley. And, you know, would say, no, look, like, the biggest money fights are by far Canelo's fights. They're completely wiping out Joshua's revenue numbers. It's kind of weird now because, like, this is going to do a huge gate, but, like, you know, the finances are flipped on their head because it all comes down to DAZN subscriptions, right? It's not pay-per-view anymore. So the overall revenue generated is going to be significantly lower, and you're, you know, trying to base the valuation of it on, like, DAZN subscriptions and DAZN's valuation, and it becomes a weird weird thing. Like, you can't as cleanly say he's just the biggest money guy anymore. We also don't know what he's getting paid. You know, it's like he has that guaranteed DAZN money, but you'd have to think that represents a pay cut versus what he could have made fighting Jacobs on pay-per-view. Yep. You know, if he's making $33 million, that then becomes a weird thing. He's, you know, no longer necessarily the highest paid fighter. It isn't necessarily the biggest fight in terms of revenue anymore because you remove the pay-per-view piece. So it's kind of weird. Anyway, I can't wait, though. Dude, your initial thoughts.
Manny Pacquiao is going to end up being the highest paid athlete in 2019. That's what's going to happen.
Interesting.
Isn't that crazy? It's 2019. Yeah, I'll just double check. It's 2019, and Manny Pacquiao very likely could wind up being the money man again in boxing, given that Canelo's gone over to this, you know, these flat fees from DAZN, and they're not even generating that much money from his fights anyway. But I also really interesting that this is the, or no, you said Spence Garcia is the fight you're most looking forward to. Like, I think you're a little crazy. Like, first of all, that's a long-term view. Like, I'm trying to find something more interesting to be excited about sooner. And the fight that I'm most excited about, we're going to talk about later. So it's just a little teaser right now. But I believe that this for sure is the biggest fight in boxing right now. Like, for one, Canelo's the biggest star. I love your point, though, about the fact that is he really the biggest fight in boxing now that he doesn't have pay-per-view money coming in? That's a real interesting conversation to have.
It becomes a weird self-fulfilling prophecy of Eddie Hearn, right? Because, like, he would say that Joshua is the number one star, and because of the deal that he helped make with Canelo, that might have then pushed Joshua back into the number one slot.
Game. I don't think this is a very interesting matchup, though. I think when we're talking about the most interesting matchup, the most fascinating one, that's clearly Spence Garcia. Even if it has a predictable outcome, I think just the logistics of it are, you have two pound-for-pound fighters meeting each other. And Garcia ain't like, he's not like Danny Jacobs pound-for-pound, who Reddit has on their pound-for-pound list, which is bizarre. But Mikey Garcia is a guy who's just like, such an intelligent fighter. But anyway, I think this fight specifically, Canelo Jacobs, is pretty predictable. I think we're going to see a very close fight. Canelo's going to edge it out. Danny Jacobs will rise to the occasion, though, and he will make this one hell of a fight. And he does a really good job matching his opponents, delivering close to what they deliver. And that makes for interesting fights, entertaining fights, and close fights. And I think this is going to be pretty similar to his fight with Golovkin. I don't think Canelo's going to knock him down, but I think it's going to be a hard-fought fight. I think Canelo definitely is going to lose rounds in this one, and it's going to become a close fight. Probably people will cry robbery at the end of it, as they often do, but surprise, surprise, when you fight other good fighters, they tend to be close, unless you're Floyd Mayweather and your style is just, you know, conducive to winning clearly, and you're better. But, like, in terms of what this means for DAZN, because you brought up DAZN, and just putting in the, you know, looking at DAZN and this being in the context of a big fight, the added monthly subscriptions that they're going to get from this, because I've seen people say this is going to be a huge fight for DAZN, they're going to add so many subscribers with these two guys fighting. Well, I don't really think so. I don't think this is going to be that big. It's going to be big in comparison to the past, but not big in the grand scheme of things, because they can add as many subscriptions as they want. I do not believe that it could cover the cost of the fighters. Just by my rough estimation of how many subscribers they would need to add in order to cover my presumed purses of Canelo Jacobs, prediction of what they'll both make, they'd need to add just over 4 million subscribers that pay that month to cover the main event. And that's just the main event.
Well, but, I mean, that's not really how that math works, right? Because they're, yeah, definitely they're losing money in the short term. But, I mean, yeah, if there is an argument, they're trying to bend the curve off, get more long-term subscribers, and then, you know, hopefully bring on more content. But, yeah, I mean, they're definitely going to be, you know, bleeding money for the foreseeable future.
Well, I can tell you, because I'm going to get into this a little bit on when we talk about ESPN in a little bit, that ain't going to happen. But we'll pause that for just a sec, because we talked about Gennady Golovkin, and Mike Coppinger has reported that PBC is the leader in the house to sign Gennady Golovkin. Do you think that that's PBC spin, or do you think Golovkin is legitimately leaning that way?
I am. So, it's so hard to tell. I'm not going to claim to have any inside knowledge whatsoever. So really all I can answer is in terms of, you know, what would make sense business-wise for him. I think it comes down to this. Look, if Pacquiao got $10 million guarantee for Broner and then made some additional upside off the pay-per-view numbers, you know, if Golovkin can get a deal like that, that's, you know, that's a lot of money, you know, so it really comes down to, like, so many people speculating with these things about who should sign with the Zone or whatever. I mean, you know, said before, like, Canelo has got a huge guarantee. Great. Good for Canelo. If you go down to the number two highest paid, it drops off completely, and then it's not really worth, you know, it's hard to find many other people where you'd say there's a clear reason for them to be on the network. You know, Jesse Vargas is kind of overpaid probably for Jesse Vargas, but it's not a huge amount of money, you know. And speaking of Top Rank, like Top Rank with their streaming service, like, you know, Crawford is getting paid $3 million a fight. That's been heavily reported, but they're trying as hard as possible to, you know, get out of having to pay that money and trying to get him on a pay-per-view, even, you know, with this kind of stunt fight against Amir Khan. So, you know, if PBC is doing pay-per-views, that opens up the door to pay Golovkin a lot of money. You know, it's basically like, does ESPN want to lose money on him to not do pay-per-views? Does Zone want to lose a lot of money on him to not do pay-per-views, or does PBC want to create a situation with pay-per-view where everyone's getting money and he's getting a lot of money specifically? So that's the general argument. It's hard to see, though, with Jacobs now going over to fight Canelo. Like, that seemed like a possible PBC pay-per-view, since Jacobs was a free agent at that point. And Charlo is a possible pay-per-view opponent. That seems at least on the back burner. I mean, he's going to, you'd think, at least have to have one more fight coming off the Khorbov fight to shine things up a bit. Maybe not. Maybe they could go straight into a Golovkin fight, you know. But I don't know. It's so weird. It's really like, it comes down to, is DAZN going to throw magic money at him, or is he going to do something on pay-per-view with the PBC where they also are going to have some type of leap of faith and give him a pretty high guarantee? It's weird. I don't know. I mean, do you have a strong thought on it? Like, it seemed like the PBC could be a great possibility for him with both Charlo and Jacobs. But again, it's like Jacobs has been removed from that, and Charlo has been at least, you know, delayed, you would think.
Well, I think here's the thing to consider. If Golovkin was advised by Al Haymon, wouldn't Haymon try to get him that third fight with Canelo? Usually, in the past, that would be certainly. If he signed with PBC, that would mean Haymon is advising him. And I think what we've seen with Jacobs, given that Jacobs was close to being in the running with Canelo, Golovkin would be leaning that way. But then, since there's a flat fee, we know that that may not be the best thing for Golovkin at this point. If he can get a big pay-per-view, which we don't know about. So I think it's really hard to answer this question. I can see it both ways. I can see maybe that they've already signed Golovkin and they're just dropping hints and they're waiting for the first fight that they're going to sign for Golovkin so they can announce a fight with the signing. I can see that. But I can also see this as nobody knows, and Coppinger may know a little bit that they've at least been in negotiations, and maybe someone's told him the highest offers from PBC, so maybe that's how they put them as a leader in the house, or maybe that they just met with Golovkin the day before and they figured, oh, well, if he met with us yesterday, we're the leader. I don't know. I think personally that is probably spin, and but I don't know. I'm pretty sure that Golovkin is doing everything that he needs to do to make sure he gets the best deal. So I don't know. But I really hope that we can get this over with, because I'm really tired of having to talk about this all the time. Just announce your signing and be done with it. I let me put your next fight in the calendar. If you're not subscribed to the calendar, by the way, you need to be. ESPN, they did this full-scale advertising campaign for the first UFC event. I'm talking like commercials through all their programming, UFC fighters and Dana White showing up to all their programming, advertisements online. They like redid the website so that they have like special stuff for the UFC, pop-up advertising on their app, a ton of marketing for this first event. The question is, should Top Rank be worried that ESPN's focusing so much on ESPN, or sorry, on ESPN is focusing so much on the UFC? I'll go first and say absolutely not. Like, if you think that, hold your horses. Like, it's, here's the thing, ESPN's deal with UFC is nothing like their deal with Top Rank. Unfortunately, Top Rank made their deal first, so ESPN just kind of made that because I was the first one to make. And the UFC was signed to basically be the B-side for the NFL and the NBA. So, like, they spent a lot more money on the UFC, and a lot more is riding on this deal than with the Top Rank deal. And it looks like it's working. So ESPN released numbers. They actually released the numbers from the ESPN Plus broadcast. Okay, this is what happens when you do really good, days in. They added a little over 500,000 subscribers in 2 days from their UFC fight. And, you know, the funny thing is, even with that many subscribers, that's only an added $2.8 million of, like, subscription fees for that month. And, you know, it leads me to think about, like, the whole online model and if that could ever work, because I think it's flawed. It's super interesting, and I like it because, you know, you can literally just rewind a fight. You could show up late to the fight and just watch it back immediately. That's super cool. But, like, I don't know. It just seems like they don't make a lot of money. Like, $2.8 million a month, it doesn't even cover the main event for a lot of shows. So, but again, this isn't evidence of failure, okay? I think you could see it that way, but, like, you got to chill. Who knows how this is going to pan out? Everyone thought that PBC was dead, and then they went and signed two very big deals. So, like, of course it's different because DAZN and ESPN Plus, they're operating on a completely different model, but, like, it's not a new or a novel concept to lose money for a long period of time before you capitalize somehow. So I think it's pretty good. Do you think Top Rank should be worried? And do you have a response to them adding more than 500,000 subscribers for their event?
Yeah, very interesting to get the actual subscriber numbers. I was just reading the press release as you were saying that. Still, you know, as you said, it's like the overall magnitude is still not gigantic. You know, you would think in terms of the business model, and you'd think you're bringing on, you know, you have a huge UFC fan base, so you'd think that the gain would be front loaded in terms of the amount of people that would come on, especially since it was a big card. So it is, yeah. But yeah, as far as should Top Rank be worried? I mean, it was extremely striking. Like, I mean, I was on ESPN Plus this weekend to watch the Top Rank card, watch all the preliminaries, by the way. I normally don't do that, but yeah, watched all the prelims on the Top Rank card, watched everything.
And I mean, fight on there. I'm trying to remember which one it was though.
Well, anyway, I'll try to keep this focused, but yeah, UFC was everywhere. I mean, I've never seen that type of attention for Top Rank, and something, you know, for all the talk about Top Rank saying, you know, we're a priority with ESPN, we have the 7-year deal, whatever, it's like it takes like 6 clicks to get to the fights. You know, it's like you have to click like sports, other sports, then, you know, it's alphabetical order, then go all the way down to boxing. Yeah, I mean, it's like it really is treated as like, you know, such a tertiary thing. I mean, it's funny, when PBC first had their deals, the networks treated them like garbage, basically. You know, it's like there was so little cooperation with their other programming, like the stuff we kind of expected just didn't happen. ESPN got their deal with Top Rank, ESPN deal happened, and we were astounded, like, wow, they're actually getting coverage on, you know, some of their morning shows and stuff. Like, you know, they're treating this as a big deal. There's some cooperation. You know, and then the PBC on Fox deal comes over and it completely, you know, wiped that out in terms of the level of competition. Like, they have all the shoulder programming. It's actually on, you know, main Fox. There's tons of coverage on FS1, tons of coverage during PBC or Fox's other sports broadcasts, you know, prime stuff during their NFL games, championship games even. And, you know, it's kind of funny. Meanwhile, the ESPN Top Rank stuff has kind of, you know, petered off. Like, I thought at the time, like, oh, you know, it doesn't have a priority place on the app. It's like, yeah, has slipped away, and UFC seems to have replaced any momentum they had before then.
Yeah, like Top Rank was definitely getting coverage on like ESPN, but like it ain't like this. And I don't think there's any cause for concern, because they put up a hell of a lot more money for UFC than they did for Top Rank. And you're saying we should jump on Thurman, but No.
Okay.
Sergey Kovalev was charged with assault. Specifically, I pressed a button and something is trying to not have us not talk about this. I'm back on the document.
Kathy Dubas running interference.
Just spoiled where we're going with this. Specifically, Sergey Kovalev was charged with assault on a person likely to produce great bodily harm. According to TMZ, Kovalev struck a woman, causing a broken nose, a concussion, and a displaced disc in her neck. Sounds about right for a professional boxer punching a woman. Kovalev released a statement asking for fans not to come to conclusions, and this happened in June, and we're barely hearing about it right now before his fight. Why do you think the story is only coming out right now and not in June, as Kovalev stated? I think that's kind of a dumb thing for Kovalev to say, first of all.
I never know how this stuff works. I mean, thankfully, I have not had any interactions with the criminal justice system. But yeah, it's weird how this stuff, like, I know, like, Jermell Charlo had an issue that came out way later. I don't know. I mean, I'm not a criminal justice guy. I don't know how that stuff works. But yeah, it was very weird seeing them talk about it on the ESPN broadcast, where they're like, well, these are very serious accusations. And they just sort of read a release from Kathy Duva, like, well, the fight's still going to go on. Like, he deserves his day in court, is the party line.
Sure.
It's pretty crazy. I mean, this is something, like, you know, realizing as boxing fans, like, we're so forgiving of this crazy stuff. Like, were this in other sports, or were some, like, liberal bloggers to get a hold of this, like, you know, they could really make a field day of this, trying to shame ESPN for broadcasting this fight. But, you know,
bro,
I don't know. I mean, boxing,
man, sit down,
is
Tom, business. Sit down. Let me school you real quick.
Sure.
On the ESPN Plus undercard for the UFC, the very first UFC event, do you know who fought?
I have no idea.
A guy by the name of Greg Hardy. Do you know what Greg Hardy's popular for?
I do not know that.
No, do you know what he's popular for?
I don't know anything about Greg Hardy or why he's popular.
So Greg Hardy used to play in the NFL. On July 15, 2014, Hardy was found guilty of assaulting an ex-girlfriend and sentenced to 18 months probation, as well as being suspended for 10 games by the NFL. He's had this little run-in with domestic violence. I believe there were pictures, just reading Wikipedia. Hardy was arrested for assaulting and communicating threats after he was alleged to have assaulted an ex-girlfriend by grabbing her, throwing her into furniture, strangling her, and threatening to kill her. So, yeah. Far be it from the world of sports to, you know, punish a guy and like Shanahan. I mean, we're certainly turning a leaf with the NFL, like guys who get into these situations, like Ray Rice, are not returning to the league. We just saw with running back from the Chiefs, but like
I can't help you out there.
But
sorry.
Like this, look, this is like if Kovalev is allowed to fight this, I wouldn't be shocked, you know. And of course, he does deserve his day in court. Blah blah blah. Here's a funny thing. We're not gonna dress on this because we need to keep this moving. But I will say that it was really funny when Chris Mannix tweeted out that he tried to get his hands on the documents for months about this, for months, referring to the fact that this was not reported until now. Somebody on Twitter tweeted at him very quickly after he made that tweet, say, "This took me 5 minutes to find. You're a journalist, right?" And it was the court documents. So that shows you where boxing journalism is. And I would not be surprised if there was a little bit of a cover-up.
Well, yeah, and specifically, Mannix has a very close relationship with Main Events. So, you know.
Hey, man, I don't know nothing about that. I'm not accusing anybody of anything, but it sounds like you are.
I don't know. It's kind of weird for him to specifically say, like, I wanted these documents and couldn't get them. Like, you know, he is just like, you know, he used to do Main Events broadcasts when they did NBC. And he's spoken about that very openly. Like, he has Main Events people on his podcast. He's very friendly with them. Like, anyway.
He deleted his tweet.
We can move on. Oh, he did. Okay.
Anyway, Keith Thurman will return after 2 years out of the ring against Jose Cito Lopez. Is this an easy win for Keith Thurman?
This fight is all about, you know, the struggle of his body, the struggle of him getting out. Yeah, look, he's been out for 2 years. He has had a lot of injuries. He's been removed from boxing for a lot of that time. So, I mean, if there is any time when a fighter deserves or at least it makes sense for them to have a tune-up fight, it is this fight. You know, if a fan wants to say, "I don't need to watch Thurman have a tune-up fight just to prove that he's healthy," fine, I get it. But there is definitely a chance that this thing could go bad for him here. And it is definitely the correct level of opponent for him to be taking. It would not make sense for him to be in a higher level fight. Because, again, even if he lost a higher level fight, then it would just create excuses. Like, it just wouldn't make sense. So, definitely not an easy situation. I mean, he's got a lot on his plate coming back in this fight. What's your take?
No, this is not an easy win for Keith Thurman. Like, not at all. And I think a lot of boxing fans are frequently trapped in the past. I think, look, 2 years have passed, and it's very likely that Keith Thurman had a window of his prime. And I'm not saying he's out of his prime. Don't get this twisted. But I think if you think of a prime like a mountain where you're going up and you're ascending to your peak and then you start to go down, and it's a gradual decrease down as it is a gradual decrease up usually. And Keith Thurman is probably missed his peak and is already on the way down. And that's what being out of the ring 2 years does, and that's what getting injured does to you. And I think if you disregard that, you disregard the fact that he's been out for 2 years. He's been out with an elbow injury, which I think is very bad for a boxer to have. If you disregard that and you just call this a mismatch, then you're either crazy or you're a really hardcore Keith Thurman fan. Like, I'm skeptical of Keith Thurman. I think Thurman is going to have a lot of things going on with him. I think getting back into the ring, there's going to be nerves. There will be his own questions about his own body. I've talked about this in the past, about sports surgeons talking about athletes and their rehab processes. And the worst injuries are the kinds where the worst rehabbing is when a fighter has to question themselves and they don't trust their body. That's when you actually you start to get more injuries and your performance declines at a rapid rate. There's that we don't know if that will be at play. There's going to be the hesitancy of how he can push himself, or if he can push himself to be the same Keith Thurman that we knew him to be. I think all of these are going to be at play in addition to ring rust. I think Thurman's going to really need to work to get himself back to where he was. And, you know, Josecito Lopez is a really good opponent because while he is beatable, like, nobody's going to sit here and say that Josecito Lopez is Sean Porter or anything, but he's going to come in and he's going to push Thurman. And it's really going to see if Thurman can get back to himself. And if he's back to himself, sure, he'll smoke Josecito Lopez, but I think he's going to have to deal with a lot in addition to Josecito Lopez, who's going to be coming forward and throwing punches. So I don't think this is an easy win for Thurman. I think Thurman will win, but I think for Thurman, it will not be easy. And I look forward to seeing Thurman win because there are fights we want to see Thurman in, and I hope to see Thurman as the Thurman we knew the last time we saw him in the ring, because that was one of the most explosive fighters in the sport. Any response to that, or should we move on?
Yeah, very, very quick. I just, like, Josecito Lopez should be a good style matchup for Keith Thurman. I mean, he's a rugged brawler type guy. When he's beaten guys, it's like, think of like the Victor Ortiz fight when he scored upsets. It was because of, you know, determination and grit. And that is not what you want about Keith Thurman. He's a very strong puncher. If someone's coming in on Keith Thurman, that's not going to be a good situation. Also, Lopez has only fought four times in the last 4 years. So, I mean, this is the right opponent for a tune-up. This is not a guy who's coming in as a spoiler. I mean, they knew exactly what they were doing when they chose him.
Well,
yeah,
I think there's potential. Like, there's potential that he could be a spoiler because Josecito Lopez can box a little bit, and he can basically fight in the same way Thurman wants to fight, which is like, all right, we'll just swing. And so I think, but that's what makes this a good comeback fight for Thurman. It really puts Thurman into position for him to be himself and to work himself back to being who he was. I think if they brought in a guy with a style that's going to, Thurman's really going to need to adjust to someone's style, that could be troublesome. Moving on, if we see Thurman struggle, which I think like a lot of struggle, where he still wins, but it doesn't look like himself, what do you think the next move for him will be?
I mean, that's a good question. I mean, look, he's still marketable. I mean, we've done a lot of talking, I feel like, of, you know, where does Jennings go? Where does Linares go if you have a top guy who really drops down and doesn't look good? I think there's still many opportunities for him. I mean, if he doesn't look good, that would seem to almost make a Pacquiao fight even bigger. You know, if he looks terrible, then he could fight Broner. You know, something I was saying with Pacquiao coming out of the Broner fight, it was like they can project so many things onto that if they want to. Like, if they want to have Pacquiao fight a lower level guy, he kind of has an out to do that, whereas guys say like Spencer Crawford would get nothing but shit for fighting a lower level opposition because he'd be viewed as a mismatch. Like, there's sort of an underdog story built into Pacquiao being, you know, 40 at this point. What did you say?
I said that's not stopping Crawford.
Yeah, well, again, Buddy's getting shut on. You know, that's sort of the point. So Thurman, if he looks bad, then he will have more of an excuse to fight a lower level of opposition, whereas before he was kind of handcuffed into fighting anyone except for Spence. And, you know, he just has so many opportunities to make seven-figure paydays. I mean, the Pacquiao fight's there. Spence Garcia fight is there. Rematches with Porter or Danny Garcia. It's really a question of just, you know, how big can it get for him? You know, can he really get to like the eight-figure level? And then, you know, conversely, like if he does look injured, you know, how bad could that be in terms of him really just having to salvage some version of the end of his career?
Yeah, I think any sort of struggle, and it's Pacquiao time. Strike while you still got it. Make that pay-per-view. They both get paid. Maybe he wins, maybe he loses. But like, if Thurman doesn't look like himself, he's got to fight Pacquiao next. And that's really just like the end of the road for him, unless, you know, maybe 8 more months out of the ring is going to bring him back to 100%. But who knows? We got to wrap this up. So why don't you give us a preview of the Konaki versus Gerald Washington fight? And then I'll take the Neon Bayar Marrero fight.
Konaki, you know, fun heavyweight, not in super good shape. His last fight was again very sloppy. Gerald Washington shown himself to be a level below. I mean, this is a fight that Konaki should probably win by knockout. Win by knockout keeps, I mean, that's sort of the funny thing, right? You know, speaking of like Pacquiao beating Broner, it's like Porter beat Broner, Pacquiao beat Broner. In a way, there's like parity there. So it's like if Konecny knocks out Washington, that gives parity with Wilder, who knocked out Washington. I mean, similar to Konecny having knocked out Spilka. You know, I don't think a reasonable person would say that Konecny's on the same level as Wilder, but it's the right level of opponent to keep moving him forward. So as far as what it's going to look like, Washington is a big guy. He can stink fights out. Is there a chance Washington win by decision? Yeah, maybe. But I think I'm definitely going with Konecny, and I think a late knockout is something to root for in the fight. It's not necessarily the favorite outcome, but it's something if you're watching at home, I think you can root for Konecny in the fight and root for him to try to get the stoppage late.
Okay. For the Tugsugat Niambar
King
fight.
Tug.
Yep, King Tug Niambar versus Claudio Marrero. This is a WBC featherweight eliminator. And I'm going to tell you this one. I'll tell you this much, okay? Like, if this is your first time seeing Niambar, you're going to love him. This is one of my favorites. And this is one of the fights that I'm looking forward to. The fight I'm looking forward to the most in all of boxing right now. And you think, oh, this is crazy. Well, it's this week, so I get to pick another one next week. But this, like, Niambar, he's got a great amateur pedigree. He won a silver medal at the 2012 Olympics. He's 26 years old. He's a standard boxer puncher. But he fights with a really weird rhythm. Like, it's odd how frequently he lands punches. And it's because he's like a rhythm fighter, but his rhythm is like guys aren't ready to defend against the way he fights. And he's got perhaps one of the best right hands in boxing. Seriously, go look at his fights. PBC's got a bunch of his fights online that you can look at. Look at his fight with Harmonito De La Torre. Look at his fight with Oscar Escandón. His right hand is like special. He throws combinations. His rhythm throws people off. And then Claudio Marrero is a really decent fighter. He's coming off of a first round knockout over Jorge Lara, who himself was one of the most exciting featherweight prospects in the world. And look, if he can build off of that win, this will be an explosive fight. It will be the perfect opener. The styles are going to match up well. I think if you were going to pick a fighter, a style specifically that could give Niambar the kind of fight that would be explosive, it's Claudio Marrero. So like this fight is going to be awesome. I'm pretty sure Niambar, if he wins this fight, puts himself as the number one contender for Gary Russell Jr. And that would be a great fight. So let's move on to Jaime Munguia. He's fighting. And all I'll say about this fight, he's going to fight Takashi Inoue. He's going to beat him. There needs to be a three-way trade between PBC, ESPN, and DAZN, where I think ESPN should get Marcus Brown, PBC should get Munguia, and DAZN should get someone. But they should get someone because they would be better suited on these other brands because those brands are networks, streaming services, whatever, are deeper in those divisions. So realistically, though, if Munguia wins, he's going to probably fight the winner of Ted Cheeseman and Sergio Garcia, which is like, whatever. You have any thoughts on this one?
Yeah, very, very quick. I think this is the right level of opponent. I mean, they're basically treating Inoue like he's a prospect, even though he has a world title. Takashi Inoue, not a great fighter, you know, fought a very competitive fight against a 31-9 fighter in his last fight. In a way, should win, you know, similar to the Konecny fight, I'll say,
Munguia,
you know,
should win.
Yeah, Munguia should win, similar to the Konecny fight, where I was saying, you know, he's favored to win and fan at home can root for a knockout. I think you're looking, you know, Munguia blew out Saddam Ali, looked more pedestrian in his last fight against Liam Smith. I think this is a fight where you can, that was two fights ago, where you can look to see if, this is somewhere probably better than Brandon Cook, probably worse than Liam Smith. So it'll be interesting to see what that ends up looking like.
And so those are the fights this coming weekend. And this is another episode that we have done. Tom, as always, great to have you on. We are going to be doing a giveaway very soon once I receive the books in the mail. So thank you for listening. Leave a rating, a review. Become a backer, patreon.com/SundayPuncher. Upvote Tom's gifts. And we will be back next week.
Talk to you later, guys. Killer be killed. The main goal just try and get home like Wrigley Field. Shells old, pop out revolvers. They hit him, me still. Can't touch the soul. They act like you owe them. Don't hit him, me still. I say I rap shit, I really didn't.